Great. Thanks, Dave. I'm going to start out today. My report is on the B-Board report, the leadership trip that we took to Europe. And I'd like to start by saying how much the officers thoughtfully considered the decision to take this international trip before we chose to do that. We don't have a total cost yet for what the trip was, but we were very concerned about spending producer dollars in these economic times that we're in now. And so that was a thoughtful consideration before we chose to go ahead and do this. Now, in the beginning, our goals really were to gather information. We needed to understand the dynamics of these important foreign markets. We also wanted to be able to impart information, to tell our story about the high-quality product we have. And for our producers, we knew it was important that we investigate, analyze, and understand what our checkoff dollars are doing in these foreign markets. Now, what we didn't fully realize is the impact that we would have. We were not a group of businessmen looking to sell specific products into these markets. We're producers. And as my daughter is very fond of saying, you know, it's just you, Mom. She brings me right down to earth. And so it was just us, and we were going over there. It wasn't viewed that way, although we see ourselves as, you know, just producers. It wasn't viewed that way to the exporters and the officials that we met with during this trip. It made a real impact on them and to them. When we met with top leaders, when we, as the top leaders of our nation's beef board, came to them saying, what can we do? How can we work together better? How can we improve our relationships here? So we made some contacts that had not been able to be done before this. And I think it was this group going over. Now, again, not that, you know, we think we're so great, but as a group going over there, it made a difference. So I'll start in with this show. So what I think we'll do is I'll just give the slideshow presentation first, and then afterwards we'll have questions and answers. Dave and Dan can join me, be done with ice cream then. And so here we go. Here are the participants. These three fine gentlemen and I, along with Dan Holstrom, who's the chairman of USMEF. He joined us for part of the time while we were in Europe. John Brook, the USMEF director of the Europe, Russian, and Middle East. And Thad Lively. See, am I doing this correctly? Here we go. See, now that I'm getting old, I had to do the glasses for the down here and the knot for over there. It's a little complicated. So we had a very busy schedule. We visited Belgium, France, Russia, and England. As we embarked on this trip, our goals were to understand more about the opportunities and the challenges in the export market and what role the checkoff would be playing in those markets. So we chose Europe and Russia. There we go. because the market opportunities that exist there are very similar in both of these markets. There is currently much growth potential, but more importantly, there exists the possibility of even greater growth potential in the future. They also are very different markets. Europe, there's a very sophisticated beef market already in existence, but in Russia, it's still very much a developing market. In general, we found that success will come when we have both a long-term commitment and good staff on the ground, but also relationships with key players. This here is the Director General and his assistant of MAR Russia, which is an importer and distributor in the HRI sector. It's also important to build relationships within political and economic environment. This is a staff, Renate Nicolet, and other staff members, and they work directly for the EU Commissioner for Trade, which is our equivalent of Susan Schwab in our government. So specifically in Europe, the production will continue its downward trend, and they will continue to have a need for imports to grow here. Europe is poised to become one of the largest beef importers in the world. This is Dennis Clark that we met with. He's with Towers Thompson, a partner in the International Food Group, and he was extremely dynamic. You can just see by his, he is very enthusiastic and will be really do his best. I think he'll do a lot in helping us. We also met with Paul Vandenmuter. He is the owner of Cormex, which is a specialty importer and purveyor of meat. And we visited an ISPC store, which is a restaurant supply store, and they sold there, as you can see, U.S. beef. Our target market in Europe will be consumers at the high end of the income scale. Our beef will be placed at the top 1%. Did I go too fast? The top 1% of the market, and this 60,000 metric tons is the equivalent of about 133 million pounds of new exports a year. That would place Europe in the top 5 export markets. However, in order to do that, we must supply the product that they want. And that means high-quality beef, animal ID, and no hormones. If we want to sell in their market, we must supply what they want. Okay, there is increasing visibility for U.S. beef with importers, with retailers, with chefs at the high end of this market. But we can't do this in a vacuum. We really need the help of government officials. Here we met with Neil Parrish. He's just been in the news lately. He's the chairman of the European Parliament's Agriculture Commission and also the Animal Welfare Group chairman. It's important for us to work at, well, let me say, though, too, be very careful to say that we cannot lobby any government officials in the United States. We are very well aware of that. However, in the foreign sector, we can talk about trade issues. So we're helping to work with him to simplify requirements necessary for U.S. producers to export and give a consistent supply of beef to Europe. Here we met with other representatives of the Foreign Agricultural Service. This is in Belgium. Here we go. When it comes to Russia, Russia has excellent growth potential for U.S. beef in the Russian market. There is growing beef consumption and demand with declining production. That's a perfect setup for us to be able to send our beef there. This photo was taken in the Russian equivalent of Costco. An American tenderloin there sells for about $25, $26 per pound. The Russian middle class is growing and consumption patterns are changing. Check out Tom and Galina, who is the staff person in Moscow. Very, very common sight now in the cities, places like McDonald's. Globally, the beef prices are now being driven by the Russian beef demand. Across the world, it's being driven by the Russian demand. This is a photo of a Russian wet market. Not sure if you can tell, but that's just a big tree trunk and an axe on there. And we were able to get this photo real quickly before the Russian police came. We were worried they were going to take Dan and Dave away with them. They followed us around everywhere we went. No photos in Russia. Let's see. In cities, however, there are huge changes taking place in the distribution channels. You can see the difference between this supermarket and the wet market in the previous slide. Okay, booming restaurant markets, all styles. Many different ones here. We're at Goodman's Steakhouse, which is modeled on a U.S. steakhouse, a U.S. restaurant. And the manager, general manager of Goodman's, was Mikhail Zelman. They have seven restaurants in his chain, and so many opportunities exist in food service, in retail, and in the processing plants. Thanks to the Chekhov and USMEF's helping, we're making a real difference in Russia today. Our dollars are being used for training everyone from raw material buyers to chefs. All right, so as you can tell by this graph on this slide, tremendous opportunities exist in our foreign market. Tremendous opportunities. This is the beef deficit. How much more beef they're consuming in these countries than they produce. This represents opportunity for us as U.S. producers. There we go, working for farmers only. I had to get that shut in. So let's see. Back to the graph. If you have any questions, this would be a great time. I'll stand away and questions can be directed at any of us. Yeah, go ahead.
So what did they say was the main reason beef supply was diminishing in these countries you talked about? They don't work grains anymore.
Well, in Russia, for instance, the people are moving out of the provincial areas into the cities, and they just are not, they're just not going into beef production. In Europe, again, you know, it's still a growing segment. It's land base, a lot of it in Europe, and they're just not. In England, and I don't think I'll get the statistics right, but in England, they had huge subsidies for the farmers and producers, and those are changing. And so as they change, it's not as profitable for producers to stay in the beef market, and so they are getting out. But I'll let Dan. Dan's got more detail on this.
Yes, we wanted to give a few additional comments from our perspectives. Thank you, Lucinda, for the slideshow. But why are they not producing? Essentially because the subsidies were decoupled. When a farmer could receive a subsidy equivalent to what he was receiving when he produced, just not produce and get the money. Europe was a big competitor in the export market. Today, they're down, like Lucinda said, 378,000 metric tons. We're talking about eventually reaching 700,000 metric tons, which would be roughly the equivalent of 2 million head a year. That's Europe. 425 million people in an economy that is very robust, a very core group of high-income people. And what we were going to make a few additional comments in general, but one of the things that happened, if you notice the export market reports, the week after we left Russia, there were the highest beef sales in Russia in history. Now, Dave tells me we cannot take credit for that. But I sure would like to. A specific example of what Lucinda was talking about in terms of our being there. You know, we're just one of you. We're nothing. We're not, no one special. But over there, we were labeled as the industry leaders. So people would meet with us that wouldn't ordinarily meet with staff. We met with the largest private importer in Russia. He had 600 metric tons of livers coming in. And I think I have written down here what the equivalent is. But a lot of meat and 1,500 metric tons of, you know, 3 million pounds of middle meats. And he did not realize, because these were considered high dollar meats, that he could get a 15% import discount. He was paying 30% on the product that he could have paid 15% for. As a result of our conversation with him, he learned he could have saved $500,000. Now, Tom asked him, what would you do with that money on your next shipment? And he said, I'll use it to buy more product. But in addition to that, he is going to be predisposed to buy even more American product. I would say in that 1 hour visit, we were able to make substantial progress in building our export market. And that was just one small example of it. Lucinda was very appropriate in pointing out, we want to aim for the high-end market. If we can get 1% of the market of people over there for whom the price is not a concern, we can add dramatically to the value of our carcasses. We want to sell a product that is not in competition with product from other parts of the world. We want to sell a product that's unique. A grain-fed product that is consistent in its quality and is reliably supplied. This is what they were asking for. We went to a sausage maker right outside of Moscow. He was buying rounds from us, you know, that we traditionally have a hard time moving, to make sausage. Our weak dollar has made it possible for us to be so competitive in the marketplace that our quality product is going into manufacturing. I have here probably 5 pages of notes of summaries of the kinds of things that we developed in the learning process. But I want to mention 2 of them that have surfaced since we left. As a result of our visit there with certain leaders in the industry, there was a conference call together of 15 meat associations and importers, or producers, producer groups in Europe. Today, one of the real obstacles we have in moving our product across the ocean to Europe is their refusal to accept our antimicrobial washes. This group came together and said, we want those washes used in Europe. They will go forward pressing the European government to approve the use of those washes. We will step back in the background and won't be the target for the European resistance to it. That increases dramatically the probability of getting approval for that which we use in our plants. You know, we use the washes in our plants because of trying to reduce the incidence of pathogens. And another thing that's coming about because of our visit is that 15 French producers are coming here to Denver in September to view our processing facilities, to view our production capabilities here. It's the kind of thing, just like in our lives, when we meet people one-to-one, we develop relationships and things can be built from that.